Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Parents and educators are united in their mission to give children the best opportunity to succeed. It goes beyond what the youngsters learn from books. Early childhood behavior can also play a role in improving education outcomes. We're talking about that on today's program with two people very much plugged into the concept. Joining me in studio, Stephen Zwolak is the CEO and Loom Institute Executive Director at University City Children's Center. Dr. Tamar Jacobson is Professor of Early Childhood Education at Rider University. She is the author of Don't Get So Upset, Help Young Children Manage Their Feelings by Understanding Your Own and Confronting Discomfort, Clearing the Way for Anti-Bias. She joins us by phone. And Dr. Jacobson, I understand it's your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Great to have you. We're looking forward to seeing you in St. Louis later this week. We'll talk about that in a bit. But let me begin with you and ask you to kind of detail what you feel the importance of early childhood development is to the future of these young people.
According to all the research on brain development, the earliest years are the most important in terms of laying down a foundation of social, emotional well-being of young children. I think you can't learn or interact with others unless you have a really strong foundation. So I think the early years are extremely important.
What comprises that foundation? What's the approach and the strategies?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I really am very interested in is what's called emotional memory, and that's what children receive from the moment that they're born, and maybe even before. So it's in the most primitive parts of our brain when we're developing very early on, and it's the time that we form attachment, and so really loving and physical loving kinds of interactions are very important for that that piece of the brain that's developing at that time. And that's going to make children confident and feel secure and attached.
And if that is not attended to, what happens then?
Oh, there's so much that goes on with emotional neglect. I mean, just starting with feelings of low self-worth, for one, which then causes people to make choices that are not good for them, not being able to interact with others or live in a society in a way that's civilly responsible. So it actually, as far as I'm concerned, affects everything.
Stephen Zwolak, you're sitting there nodding affirmatively.
Well, I've been listening to Tamar for quite a few years, and she is really one of the greater influencers in our country right now. To dovetail into what she was saying, what we are often seeing with young children right now, if they don't have the ability to develop relationships and they don't develop those early, that you'll see a certain you'll see a lot of fragmentation and almost a sense of freneticness from children who need relationships. And if we think if they don't have the relationships when they're young and we're trying to put them in school settings, the freneticness that we're seeing manifests itself as things like oppositional behavior and all sorts of things that are getting children expelled. And we are taking an outside-in approach as opposed to an inside-out approach by helping them learn to develop the relationships necessary so they feel a sense of peace and calm while they're in the learning process.
And this would obviously affect the outcomes in terms of education.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
What do you see? Go ahead, Doctor.
Sorry. I just wanted to say that, you know, you really can't read or concentrate on learning to read and write if you're unhappy or frightened or stressed. It's really hard. So as much as we'd like to teach children, they need to feel secure to be able to learn.
Well, the principal job, of course, would fall to the parents. What sort of advice do you have for parents as to when they should start really paying attention and delivering that affection and the other things that young people need?
Are you asking
Yes, I am, Dr. Jacobson.
From the day they're born. Absolutely. I have a friend now who has a brand new baby. He's just now 2 months old, and it's just been wonderful to watch how she's holding him to her body most of the day, and loving him and kissing him, and just right from the minute that they're born, they must be receiving this kind of attention. And I just wanted to reiterate what Steve said, that relationships is the key, absolutely.
Yeah.
What's it, Stephen? Go ahead.
Well, we have a real dilemma right now for our youngest children is that in St. Louis City and St. Louis County, it's between 75 and 80% of the children under five are in care outside the home for 40 or more hours. Mm. This is including infants. And who's taking care of the infants? And do we have the capacity in the early childhood arena to provide all of that loving and caring for individuals? And I think we are, early childhood education is faced with a huge challenge, which really the burden needs to be shared with our policy folks as well, because we don't have enough money to do all the things that we need to do to surround those babies with the love and care and all the tenderness that Tamar is referring to.
Boy, you talk about turning to the policy folks. These days, when we look at what's going on with budgets being slashed across the board, or at least proposed that they be slashed, that gets kind of scary.
Absolutely. Yeah. Really, really frightening. Yeah. So
It's what a colleague of ours who's so brilliant about brain development, Bruce Perry, he calls it a child illiterate society that doesn't give money for excellent quality early childhood care, starting from, the earliest years. Because if relationships are so important, you've got to have excellent people doing the work, and you've got to pay them well so that they'll stay. Yeah. And so it's all connected.
Dr. Jacobson, I note from your resume that you've spent a lot of time abroad working in various countries on issues such as these. What are we doing right and wrong compared to some of these countries? Or what are they – maybe I should put it this way. What are they doing right that we could learn from?
Well, let me just be clear. The first part of my life I wasn't teaching. I was just growing up in Africa. But the when I lived in Israel, I was a preschool kindergarten teacher, and that – I came to America about 30 years ago, so some of the things that I know about Israel in terms of education from then might be a little bit outdated, I think. What I found when I came to America, which I was surprised about, was that the learning centers and the child development centers were really extremely structured, so that children didn't really have a lot of opportunity to express themselves in play. And the teachers of very young children were really not trained really well to make those kinds of relationships that were so important. And I was surprised by that, because when I was a preschool teacher in Israel, I felt that we had a really good, solid training in how children learn developmentally and how to give them the right types of play and self-expression that we had. But, I was young then, and it was a while ago. So I don't want to say that that's exactly how it is today.
Steve, are we giving kids the right kind of play here today?
I think it's a real challenge. We think that if we skill drill our preschool-age children that they will succeed. We think we are pushing first-grade curriculum to kindergarten. We're pushing kindergarten curriculum to four-year-olds. And consequently, we are losing our best innovators. Spend a half an hour in a class of four-year-olds or three, four, and five-year-olds and watch the innovation that goes on. And they are learning everything around physics. And I mean, it's STEM is embedded. We don't have to necessarily say this is what we're doing. So we have these kids that are innovating. But if we push curriculum down, we are squelching the innovativeness, which is not just an innovative in thinking, but it's innovation in relationships, working together and crashing blocks down together and all those frameworks.
What sort of curriculum should we be talking about for kids from toddler to age six?
Tamar, you want to take that?
I'll take a bit of it and you jump in.
Okay.
As open and as diverse as possible. So, I think what I find with a lot of teachers, actually, and maybe even legislatively, is that they don't understand that children are really smart and they're very curious. And so we don't give them enough chance to sort of have an integrated curriculum where they can think about things and problem solve and ask questions and talk to each other in groups. I observe student teachers all the time in classrooms where they're asking the children to be quiet all the time. And they need to talk to each other about things. And they're seated at desks doing all kinds of dittos and worksheets where they should be actually actively, concretely engaged in doing science. I mean, even if it's just baking a cake and measuring out the flour and the eggs and counting in that way. So I think it's got to be very integrated, very hands-on, but with skilled people who know how to ask the right kind of open-ended questions to get children really thinking about things and not scared of their questions. A lot of teachers get very frightened when children ask sophisticated questions.
You know, it's fascinating. You know, I am the executive director of University City Children's Center as well, and we have children 6 weeks of age through 6 years of age. When families enroll their babies, the world is kumbaya. They listen and they understand all the emotional frameworks necessary to coo and have the mother ease. As they start growing up the developmental ladder, it seems like at four, everybody starts panicking. Going, is my child learning all the letters and numbers? Mm-hmm. And there's a real shift in thinking right around 3.5, 4 years of age. Are they ready for kindergarten? Mm-hmm. And really, we are.
Are they ready for Harvard?
Yeah. And it's a huge shift, and we work to educate families, but so many of our families have grown up in a system of outdoing the others and giving their child a head start, but we're giving them a slow start if we push and drag them down by having them face the worksheets.
I want to pick up on that point, but we have to take a break now. We'll do that. Before I do, I want to point out, however, before I forget, and you wouldn't let me forget, I'm sure, Steve, Loom Institute is presenting Avoiding Summer Meltdowns, Next Generation Discipline. That's happening this Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. at the University High School Auditorium.
Thank you.
And Dr. Jacobson will be in town for that.
That's correct.
All right. Well, that's something to look forward to. Information on that at our website at stlpublicradio.org. Welcome back. Continue the conversation, and as time allows, we'd like to bring you into it. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk at stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to early childhood development with Stephen Zwolak, the CEO and Loom Institute Executive Director at University Children's Center, University City Children's Center. Dr. Tamar Jacobson is Professor of Early Childhood Education at Rider University. Steve, I want to come back to something you said a moment ago about the children and what they're seeing and how they're reacting and how the parents are reacting when the kids are in the third and approaching kindergarten and what have you. And that is that kids are also very perceptive, and they see what – they're an audience. They see what's going on around them. And when they see anxiety on the part of parents or those people, what's happening and how do you deal with that?
Yeah. Well, that's a really multi-level question. But when children need to feel safe, not just physically safe, but they need to feel emotionally safe, they need the adults in their life to provide the buffers at both ends of the spectrum. So when they are pushing the envelope or they're feeling it, that there's somebody there to embrace them and hug them and love them and alleviate their fears. Our children are growing up with too many external fears, and they're growing up too fast, and they are caught with still want to sit on my mommy's lap, but they're not giving me my mommy's lap. And I think that's a real challenge for us.
And Dr. Jacobson, when the kids act out, what about discipline? How should that be handled?
That's a huge question, which I will be dealing with everybody on Thursday night for sure. I was just reading there's a preschool behavior forum on the National Association for Education Young Children website. And I was reading through, and people were giving strategies and all kinds of programs that help you with discipline. And there are a million different ways to tell people how to discipline children. But I think that what gets in the way of our strategies is our own emotional memory of punishment. And so it's very hard for many teachers to take a strategy and use it really authentically. So what I really think is important for effective discipline is that teachers and parents get to know how they were disciplined as children and how they feel about different things when they're working with children. It's a very emotional topic, having children behave in ways that we want them to behave or why we want them to behave in those ways. And I think we need to get in touch with who we are so that we can then work out which strategy will work best. Plus, you know, every child is unique, so there's not one size fits all. So it's a very complex topic, I think.
Yeah. And to dovetail into Dr. Jacobson, children, when they misbehave, they're missing something, and that's why they're misbehaving. That's why they're getting into mischief. Children, and frankly, we all need a real sense of belonging. When you walk into work, when a kid walks into school, they need a sense of belonging, a sense of feeling loved and really cared for, even when they are creating mischief. And they need to have appropriate power around their life. And so much of it is we're taking a lot of those pieces away. So we are seeing more mischief. And we're seeing kids what we call angry love.
One of the issues, as I see it, is that there aren't a lot of manuals out there for parenting. We learn how to parent by the way we were parented. And that can create problems because it's a totally different world, as you both have indicated, a totally different world today. So we've got to get beyond what we know from our own experience growing up, right, Doctor?
Yes, it is true that it's a totally different world. But what stays constant is that we're human beings, right, with emotions. That's constant all the way through. Some of the past things that we learned as parents are not bad. It's just a question of us getting in touch with what we know is to be good and right for children. So, of course, most parents are not going to be reading up about this stuff because parents have children because that's what we have to do. We have to procreate, and we do it sometimes planning, and sometimes it just happens. Teachers, on the other hand, they can read up and know and help parents and give advice in ways that are different to what sometimes teachers do. That's a whole nother semester, as a colleague of mine says. We have, as professionals, we have an obligation to know what's best practice, even if it interferes with how we were brought up as children. Right. Did I answer that?
Yes, I think so. Go ahead, Steve.
Don, if we were to poll people and we would say, ask the question, childhood is changing. What are the ways childhood is changing? We'd have a plethora of responses. Mm-hmm. So it could be technology, living in a nanosecond, all those things that would come to the forefront. But a child's developmental needs are still the same. Children need laps, not a laptop. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a real challenge for families because the neighbor downstairs or across the hall gets a laptop.
And kids are getting laptops at age 2 now and earlier and cell phones at age 5 and so on. I'd like to bring some listeners in as time allows, and we'll start with Dolores, who's calling from Florissant. Dolores, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just calling. I'm really appreciating the show. How essential that early nurturing is for babies. I adopted a little girl from Russia at 7 months old, and she was diagnosed when I brought her home as failure to thrive. She only weighed 11 pounds. But luckily, doing all of the things that your guests have talked about have made a big difference. It hasn't been easy, but she's now thriving and doing great in school. She still has issues, and sometimes people don't realize how important those first few months are. If there's not enough love, contact, and food, it kind of hardwires an anxiety or, anger issues, behavior issues, and sometimes ADD, no matter how good. And she did have a wonderful preschool, early care. So that was wonderful, and I'd like to give a shout out to the St. Louis Children's or the St. Louis Community College Child Development Center.
Dolores, thank you for the call. Our time's getting away, and I want to give Dr. Jacobson a chance to start a response to that question: failure to thrive.
Yeah, such an important question. I'm so glad that your child has received from you the love and care that that it's a she. I'm sorry, I think I got that wrong. But you're absolutely right. The longer we wait to give the correct kind of care, the more the brain is not developing the way it's supposed to, and then the more there are going to be these kinds of issues. So you're absolutely right. When you got your child at 7 months, that's quite late, but it's not too late, thank goodness. And I'm sure that as you continue with that, it's going to be better and better. But you're absolutely right. As early as you can, from the day they're born, is how they need to receive that kind of nurturance.
Well, and there's another major study that was done back in the 90s about adverse childhood experiences, studying early trauma in children. And the number one strategy for mitigating early trauma is attachments. Mm. And we have to be able to go in there and develop teachers and help parents understand the importance of that soothing comfort.
You know, years ago, I did a story on the influx that they were expecting of crack babies. And the gist of the story was that the best way to deal with a baby who was born of a mother that was addicted to crack was just hold them. Hold them, right. And hold them close. It was that simple.
Yeah. By the way, the website Child Trauma Academy, where Bruce Perry is the executive director of that academy, has a lot of information just about this topic. It's really important, I think, for people to maybe go there.
I'm going to take a quick call from Aaron in St. Louis City. Aaron, time's getting away. Could you make your question or comment quick, please?
Yes. Hi, and thank you for taking my call. I'm a lactation consultant and a La Leche League leader, and I do just want to mention how important breastfeeding is to help that early development of the child's brain. It is a very sensory-rich environment, being in the mother's arms close to her, you know, many times a day.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. Steve, do you want to comment on that?
No, I mean, it just to validate, yes, it makes sense when the kids are touched and held and they're nestled in close and the warmth.
And Dr. Jacobs, you're not going to disagree with that notion, I'm sure.
Not at all. Breastfeeding is so important. Also to create that bond, you know. I have another colleague who says that, you know, infants have to fall in love with their mothers, and their mothers have to fall in love back, so that there's this incredible bond that just sustains them for the rest of their lives.
In a little more than a minute that we have left, we have a tweet here that I'd like to get a response to, asking about the importance of connecting with nature in terms of developing young brains. Doctor, you want to take a crack at that in just a few seconds, if you could?
Yeah. Well, there's so much about it. First of all, in the exploring and the curiosity of children, that they can just explore and understand nature around them. But also in the aesthetics of nature, there's all this wonder. The birds, the flowers, the plants, and learning how to respect nature is so important. We don't pay enough attention to aesthetics when we're educating children. And that's a whole huge topic that... Gee, I wish we had more time.
I do too. Steve, do you want to just add to that?
Yeah, I'd like to close with, if we want to change our society, we must change the way we are teaching our youngest children. Mm-hmm. What we've been doing is not working, and we have all the research, we have all the ingredients, we have theory that have been braided together to say this is it.
It's a start to at least to recognize the fact that we know that something has to be done, so that's
correct.
Where you have to start. Once again, the Loom Institute presents Avoiding Summer Meltdowns, Next Generation Discipline. This is going to be happening this Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. at the University City High School Auditorium. Thanks to Stephen Zwolak, the CEO and Loom Institute Executive Director at University City Children's Center, and Dr. Tamar Jacobson, Professor of Early Childhood Education at Rider University. She will be in town on Thursday for that event that I just mentioned. We'll have more information on that, by the way, on our website at stlpublicradio.org. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.